Good to see everyone that's here. It's been 2 weeks since I've been up here. It feels like forever. I don't know why. But we'll pick back up on our study of what I'll call the issues of the 50s and 60s. I'll explain that term in a minute if you're not familiar with it. But today specifically, we're continuing the lesson. This is part two of the church and how it uses its funds. And so I didn't really know exactly how to lump all this together. So I gave it a subtitle of institutions, civic engagement, and then blending church and individual activities. I'll explain this a little more in a minute. So, for a recap and for any that are not familiar with this term or our visitors, it's the, so this topic, issues of the 50s and 60s, it means the 1950s and 1960s. No, I was not alive then. That is before my time. But it is something that there are still brethren that are alive today, remember this time. And remember the drama and disagreements that happened within what we'll call churches of Christ, which, of course, any group, no matter if they call themselves a church of God or the church in Corinth or the churches of Galatia, they're all churches of Christ. But what I mean is groups in the United States specifically that might have Church of Christ on their sign outside. There's a disagreement back in the 1950s and 1960s about various things of how churches should operate, and ideas of institutional boards and having potlucks and fellowship halls and kitchens and things like that. And so if you are coming at this from 2025 and not familiar with this, you probably think back in the day, everyone was really prudish and never did anything except come to church and then leave, and never had any sort of these social activities. And in fact, it's the opposite. The norm was the social activities. And then in the 1950s and 60s, people started questioning things and said, maybe everything that we're doing is not scripturally authorized and justified for churches to do. And so there's a split into two groups of institutional and non-institutional, as what we'll call it. There's a million terms. We're the non-institutional group that, doesn't engage in these things. The other group, might call us antis, I think, like anti everything. No. No fun. So anyway, so I'll kind of get into that a little bit. And so the term I'm borrowing from a series of sermons and an online PDF booklet, called Restudying the Issues of the 50s and 60s, A Historical Perspective by Bill Hall, who I have not yet found anything to say that he's not still alive. I think he is still alive. He'd be in his 80s or 90s by now. His brother, Sewell Hall, like I mentioned before, he is still alive, as far as I know, and still preaching it from time to time at Embry Hills in Atlanta. And as I mentioned the other day, Sewell Hall still talks about these issues quite regularly. It's very important to them that lived through this time. And so, I kind of took the topics in that booklet, and covered them in a slightly different way. So his were, church-supported orphan homes, which is really not an issue anymore because there is no such thing as an orphan home anymore. There's more of the foster care system, but it was more the principles of the disagreement. And then there's the sponsoring church arrangement, and we'll kind of get to that next week or next time, 2 weeks from now, I think. And then the kitchens and fellowship halls, and so I covered that in a slightly different manner, but we talked about eating in the building and the social gospel several weeks ago now. I don't even remember anymore. three, four weeks ago, I don't know. And then what we're talking about now is using church funds, and we talked about that last time also. And then next time will be churches collaborating on things. Yeah, won't get into all that. So why am I all interested in this? It's not just from an academic background, and no, I didn't grow up in the 50s and 60s, but I did come from a more liberal background, where we did all the bad things, as I say. We had potlucks, we had movie nights, we had popcorn, we collaborated with other churches. There was Christian camps that supported by church funds and gymnasiums. We did all those things. And, I thought we were doing the right things. It felt good. It was encouraging. Maybe in a hollow way, but it was encouraging. I mean, it felt good. It felt warm inside, you know, the things that we were doing. And when I first, heard about things being, these things are maybe not authorized and we shouldn't do these things. My first thought was not, oh, you're right, I'm going to change my ways. It's no, y'all are crazy. We're doing good. Like, why are you raining on our parade here? But now I've seen the light, if you will, and I agree with that these things are not authorized. And so now I'm, someone who's having come out of that, I'm a fairly fierce defender of getting away from those things. And I do get worried when I see things start creeping back toward that direction, in churches that are currently sound, because I know where it goes. All right. So today we're talking about church funds. And the question is, can we use the church's funds or its property, its building and things like that, for any person or any reason? So last week we talked about sort of the broadest argument, which is, can we just give the money away to anybody, right? Can we give money or food or whatever to saints and non-saints alike, and just blindly, help people in need? And we discussed that at length and talked about how, no, there is no scriptural authority for that sort of mentality for a church to be doing this thing. Every example we have in scripture is that the church has helped saints. They helped the brethren. And that's where the money was going to. It's especially notable when you look at the qualifications of a widow that can be helped by the church. Of all the people that you would think, you know, this is a widow. Just give her the money, you know, just help her. Come on. She needs it, right? It's like Apostle Paul says, slow down. There's careful ways we have to do this. And so, I mean, if you can, you know, put those same sort of considerations on helping a widow and making sure that she's helped the saints and raised children and all these other qualifications, then who are we to say that, you know, well, okay, that's for widows, but, you know, for anyone else who just needs a meal, we'll just give the money away to saints and non-saints. And so that's not scriptural. But anyway, not trying to rehash all of last time's lesson. But so now we're kind of bring it in a little more and say, okay, well, let's take that and say, all right, we'll only concentrate on using the money toward saints. Okay, well, are we still, you know, free reign within that realm? And of course, you know where I'm going with this. No. But so the idea, you know, what if you had an institution, a college, Fried Hardeman University or something like that, where it's a supposed Church of Christ college, but multiple churches send money to help support it. And, you know, they're training people how to be preachers and they're going to spread the gospel. And so we're helping saints, you know, and hopefully, you know, and I'm sure anyone can attend that college. I mean, I don't think they're allowed to say, you're a Baptist. Nope, you can't come in. I don't think legally you can do that, right? But generally it's going to be mostly, you know, supposed members of the Church of Christ or the kids of people who did that go to these colleges. You know, is that okay? you know, or grade schools or daycares, these institutions that, you know, would serve saints or the children of saints that haven't yet reached an age where they can't believe. Okay, so that's one consideration. Another thing we'll talk about today is, well, we've already got the building. We use it for meeting. We're using it for the right thing. But since we already have the building and it just sits here unused, you know, it's 5.5 days a week, right? Like, why don't we use it for, you know, a voting precinct so that, people can come and vote for their local offices or something like that? And I've had to go to one, Seventh-day Adventist Church, because that was my precinct, you know, at a different location. Now it's the school, which is nice. And then they have the, you know, mail-in voting, which is nice. I don't have to go anywhere. But then, you know, other things, like what about weddings? You know, what about, say you have a charity drive, clothing drive or something, and you're collecting, you know, the clothing. Like, is that, you know, that's, you know, maybe we could do that, you know, and then the really, really gray area is, blending the church's property with individual events. So, you've got a funeral, may or may not be a Christian that passed away. And you want to have a service for that person, and you're going to do good things there, and you're going to have a, you know, have a eulogy and some sort of little mini sermon that tries to get people to, you know, obey the gospel, even if they're just visiting for the funeral. You're going to do all these good things, you know. It's like, well, is that really a work of the church? You know, and can we bring our songbooks there to help, you know, sing songs? And so we'll talk about that, you know, but it's, there's these kind of gray areas, that come up, right? So. So the gist of this gets down to, how do we carry out the work of the church? How do we do these commands? So you've got an example of a church is to teach. I'll get into a little bit of, a recap of what is the work of the church, but I think we can kind of jump ahead and just say, we know church exists in at least one part of a church's mission is to teach, right? Okay, well, how do we do that? Are we only allowed to just speak with no microphone that I'm standing at right now? and only in a place that costs nothing, right? You know, so can we, you know, only meet in open fields? Even, you know, even this day and age, every piece of land is owned by somebody, right? You're trespassing. But anyway, hypothetically, right? If you could go somewhere, someone, you know, brother so-and-so has a big plot of land and we can meet there or something, you know, are we, you know, only able to teach like literally just that thing, just speaking with no money spent, no technology, no anything? Or is there a way that we can justify the use of microphones? I hope so, because I'm talking to one right now. And, you know, owning or renting a building, I hope so, because we're sitting in one right now. And if we're wrong, we're wrong. I mean, don't understand, like, just because we're doing it doesn't justify it. I mean, if we are wrong, let's talk about it and let's think about that. I do want to make sure in all of this that, you know, we all have open minds, and we all, even the things that we've kind of come to the conclusion that, hey, we're on the really conservative side of things, we should be fine, we can still question and say, well, maybe even that is not right. And that's kind of what happened in the 50s and 60s. All right. So you'll hear the term expedience, or expediency, expedient, this term doesn't belong to conservative or liberal groups in any way. So I have a page here from Bill Hall's 29-page booklet, and he talks about expediency, here. So he's on the conservative end of things. And this is jumping in the middle of the orphan home discussion. But anyway, he says there were two basic arguments given in order to justify this board of directors. Again, I'm just kind of jumping in the middle of this thought here. He says the one that probably was given most was the Bible doesn't say how to do it. This is the expediency. People would say, now the Bible tells us to help orphans. But the Bible doesn't tell us how to do it. And he goes on to explain, well, that's actually, the Bible doesn't tell a church to do that in the first place, but he's not there in the argument yet. He's kind of going along with it. He's just saying what other people said. He says, you know, we need to do this, but the Bible doesn't tell us how. So, it's just like when the Lord told us go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He didn't tell us how to go. So we can go by car. We can go by train. We can go by airplane. We can go by whatever means, we need to, he didn't say how. Similarly, the Lord told us to care for, as he goes on to the orphans thing. But anyway, and then in the end, he says, this probably was the argument we heard most, and it was put in the realm of expediency. So the idea of, you know, the Bible tells us to do a thing, but doesn't tell us how, that's, everybody kind of understands that baseline, right? You know, the Bible couldn't have predicted, well, I mean, it could have predicted cars, but it didn't. In that way, right? So it doesn't tell us it's okay. You can drive in a car. So we have to kind of allow for some general authority for that, right? Okay. And then, back in the day when I was still in my liberal ways, but starting to come out of it, I attended this lecture, which was, called Do You Understand Expediency? And got the book. And so, because there's a book on this, you can tell even the liberal side of people use this term also. But it's interesting how they go about it. Okay. I don't know. He explains what an expedient is. It's kind of funny. He talks about, you know, if you wanted to make an ice sculpture of a Arkansas Razorback, I think he says, so I think Walter would appreciate that. He's like, it'd be faster to pour a mold instead of carving it by hand or something like that, you know, but either way, you're accomplishing the job. So I just thought that was kind of funny. so this, again, this is the liberal argument about it. I'll go ahead and read this. He says, since we record this and I'm quoting this, Terry W. Frizzell is the man who's writing this. One example of an expedient that people wrongly have drawn lines over fellowship is the decision of whether or not to have a kitchen in the church building. A church building itself is an expedient, which means God has not explicitly spoken about it. True. So how can one regulate one aspect of this expedient when God has not explicitly spoken about it? Now that is terrible logic, okay? If you say, we have a building so that we can meet and accomplish the work of the church. So what he's implying there is, therefore, anything we do inside is just fine. That's a terrible, terrible conclusion to draw from this. But, yeah, anyway, the point is... that's the term you'll hear a lot when people talk about this. I don't like this term. It is an awkward term to use. If you look it up in the dictionary, it says, expedient usually implies what is immediately advantageous without regard for ethics or consistent principles. That's not how they mean it, but I don't like this word. I wish we would stop using this word. Something that you may have heard in... you know, 21st century living in America is the phrase discretionary expenses. And I like that a little better. I think that gets to something we can relate to a little more. So, I just looked up definition online is, pulled up, Experian, the credit rating people tell you your credit score and all that. So they have a little article on this. There's a million places to look this up, but they're, quick definition, discretionary spending is using money for non-essential expenses. So I don't have it here, but what are essential expenses in your life and your household's budget? Well, you probably have to pay rent or mortgage. You can't like say, you could skip it, but it wouldn't last very long. And then you get evicted or something or foreclosed. Food, you have to buy food somehow. Even that has some discretion about, you know, do you buy name brands or whatever, right? Or exactly what do you buy? Is it steak or is it just, you know, oatmeal every day? But you need some kind of food. You know, and you can go on, right? You need some kind of clothing. Do you need a different outfit for every day, you know, so that you can go a month without, you know, repeating the outfit? Maybe not, right? So again, even within the mandatory is still, there's still discretion, if you will, within that thing. But, examples of what we consider discretionary spending is, you know, eating out, gym membership, haircuts, skincare, books, music subscriptions, and streaming services, giving gifts to someone, holiday decorations, travel. You don't need these things, right? Like, if you did not spend money on those things, you'd probably be just fine for that week, you know, at least probably for, you could go your whole life without spending money on basically all of those things. So in that list, though, some of these things you say, well, that's really, that's an obvious luxury, right? Like gym membership, you don't need that. You could just run, you know, or just, you know, if you bought something, that's even a little tangential, you know, you could buy some weights and then use them at your home. You know, the membership idea is, you know, maybe a little bit of a luxury. I'm not saying it's bad. This has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. I'm just getting you to kind of think about with the idea of what we're talking about here, you know? So it's like, okay, well, that's a luxury. I can see that. Right. But then, you know, other things, not as much, right. You say, well, travel, you're like, okay. Well, I guess I have that on the next slide. So I'll get to that. So, yeah. Could you survive without all these things? Yes, I mean, you could, but are you really living, you know? Like, I mean, just, again, not at the scriptural argument yet, but just kind of mentally thinking about the idea of discretionary spending. It's like, it would be kind of a miserable life if you only spent money on the things that were absolutely necessary to survive from one day to the next. And yeah, so kind of thinking about that in a little more detail, right? So travel, you say, well, if you travel to Paris, you know, you don't live in Europe already, that's kind of a luxury, right? I'd like to go one day, but you know, that is a luxury. That's not necessary. But what if you traveled to see your grandmother before she dies? You say, well, that's not mandatory spending. It's like, well, it's not, but man, I mean, that's borderline necessary, you know, like, you really, you know, if you're able to and you could do that, I mean, that's a good thing to do. I wouldn't exactly call that, you know, a luxury, but it is a discretionary expense. You didn't have to do it. you know, and you could kind of go on with this, right? Like if you ate out an expensive restaurant, that's a luxury. But what if you're on that trip to go see grandma? And well, you don't have food with you, you know, can you go eat out in that, you know, in that trip? I mean, is that being really luxurious if you had a hamburger at McDonald's on the way to go see grandma? it's not that extreme, right? I don't love paying, you know, all that money for the food at the hospital, you know, when you're there. But, you know, if you're there and your wife just had the baby, like we did in February, you're like, well, I can't exactly bring a cooler and a microwave in here, so I'm gonna have to just kind of go down and get the food so I can stay nearby. So it's you know, there's things that on the surface seem like a luxury and maybe aren't. You know, it's like, well, if you give a diamond necklace, that's luxurious, but what if you gave someone a Bible? What if you gave food to a widowed mother? You know, that's maybe not, you know, as luxurious. Okay, so what about a church? Can a church have discretionary expenses and be authorized and be justified for spending that money on those things? So I guess more to the point, right? Can a church survive without discretionary expenses? You say, well, you know, sure you could. It's like, kinda, right? Like, it'd be hard to imagine getting all that far without it. If nothing else, you'd be relying on people to almost to donate the things or something. We could have an assembly without songbooks, and I'm sure there's lots of places that do. You know, that's kind of a foreign concept to them, but it is pretty nice to quite literally, a little bit of a pun intended, to be on the same page, right? To know that we're all singing the same song, that we're on verse one, that, you know, that we kind of know what's going to happen, right? It helps us be together and sing together. You know, could we meet without a building and always meet outside or something like that, or whatnot? It's like, well, yeah, but what if your congregation was 300 people? Are you just always going to hope that one of the members has a barn dominium or whatever, you know, that can fit 300 people in it or whatever? Are you always going to kind of lean on that? Well, what if that member falls away? You're kind of out in the cold, you know? So, There's a practicality to that. And really, I feel like it is actually an utter necessity in some way to have discretionary expenses, kind of like the expedient idea. Like, how are you going to do this thing if, you know, without some sort of, you know, I hate to call it unauthorized, because it is authorized. I feel there's a general authority, but there's no specific authorization to take a car, right? There's no specific authorization for some of these things, but we have to accomplish the mission somehow, right? So, sending aid to needy saints, that is something that churches certainly can do and have done and should do. Well, okay, so we're in Georgia. If we had, trying to send aid to needy saints in Texas, well, you know, how would we get the money there? Well, you can mail a check. You could, you know, wire it through ACH or something. You could get a person to ride a horse and bring a sack of money there, right? But every option that you can think of is not stated in the Bible for the exact means of how to get there, I don't think. I don't know. Maybe if I want, I don't know. And none of them are free. You know, there's going to be some kind of cost, but we still have to obey the command. So there's always going to be a need to do this, right? So to me, the question boils down to is what are acceptable discretionary expenses for a church? So, okay. Let's get to some scriptures. So we did this slide a few weeks ago, but I want to go through all of these, but we'll get through a few of them just as a recap. So the first one, 1 Corinthians 14:26. This has a bunch in there. It was at four different things, so this is a good one. 1 Corinthians 14:26. He says, how is it then, brethren, when you come together, okay, then this is in the context of a letter written to churches, and he says it over and over again, just skimming here, you know, verse 19, in the church, you know, I mean, the whole letter is written to a church. Verse 23, if the whole church, the context here is clearly a church, right? So verse 26, how is it then, brethren, when you come together? So one, we're supposed to meet. Every one of you hath a psalm or a hymn, a song. So there's singing, hath a doctrine. So there's teaching, hath a tongue, a revelation, interpretation. Long story there, but we don't have these kind of miraculous things today. And it says, let all things be done to edifying. And so then there's the fourth thing is something called edifying. So we have all that. The Lord's Supper, we talked about that. You know those scriptures. I'm not going to go there right now. Care for widows. Let's just go to 1 Timothy 5 because there's actually two different things there back to back. So 1 Timothy 5. So 1 Timothy 5, verse 16 is the last summarizing verse on a whole section about widows. But it just says, if any man or woman that believeth have widows, let them relieve them. So try to take care of them yourself and your own family first. And let not the church be charged or burdened, that it may relieve them that are widows indeed. So the church can be burdened in taking care of widows, but with the mindset that it's the ones that really need it. So anyway, so there's that. And then the very next verses, let the elders that rule well be counted worthy of double honor. And that can usually often means money, right? So like a double paycheck or something, especially those who labor in the word and doctrine. For the scripture saith, and then it talks about money here, that thou shalt not muzzle the ox that treadeth out the corn, and the laborer is worthy of his reward or his wages. So, So there's authorization to financially support elders. There also report of work is kind of an interesting one. I'm not going to take time to turn there. It's Acts 14:27. Sending money for needy saints to other elders. And that's an important one. Let's just do, try to keep it together. 2 Corinthians, since we're kind of over there, I'll try to do a couple scriptures in 2 Corinthians. No, I'm sorry, we were in Timothy. Well, all right, anyway. 2 Corinthians, what's the first one? 8 and 1 through 4. It says, moreover, brethren, we do you wit, to wit of the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia. So, churches, how that in a great trial of affliction and the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded under the riches of their liberality, for their power I bear record, yea, and beyond their power they were willing of themselves, praying us with much entreaty that we would receive the gift, and take upon us the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. And so there's a church that's giving money, to needy saints, and specifically to elders, to distribute it. And then a couple chapters over in 11 and verse 8. So elsewhere we talk about the church can pay its own preacher. It's kind of implied in that Timothy scripture. But it's spelled out in 1 Corinthians 9. But then what about preacher outside the congregation? And we have authorization for that too. 2 Corinthians 11. In verse 8, the Apostle Paul says, I robbed. He's being a little bit of a metaphor there. He says, I robbed other churches, taking wages of them to do you service to the church in Corinth. So that's okay for it, other churches to support one man, and then him be preaching in another location. So. All right. So we'll go through a bunch of examples now and kind of talk about what, is and is not authorized. So I'm going to kind of leave it like this, where there's, the list of what we just talked about, the list of things that are authorized that a church is to do, meeting, singing, teaching, edifying, taking care of widows, a report of work, paying its elders and its preachers, and supporting a different preacher, which we just talked about. Okay, and then we'll kind of look at what, does our question fall into one of those categories or not? So, so is this authorized? Paying that church's preachers his salary? Yes, we just talked about that, right? Supporting the preacher in a different place, even if he gets support from multiple churches. Yes, we just read that, right? paying visiting preachers. So if they just came for one Sunday or a series of lessons for gospel meeting, I think so. I don't see any problem with it. We do, but you know, so again, doesn't make it right, but I'm just saying that is something we do is to, give a check to a preacher who's visited, especially from far, away, in some way. We're supporting the teaching, and supporting a person who's doing the preaching. So I think that completely falls under the, authorized works there. So, okay, that one was simple enough. This one's a little more, maybe gray. What if you buy some things for the preacher or reimburse him for those expenses? Books, you remember those? Yeah. Everything's online now. But that was the thing. Preacher would have a library, right? Of some sort of study material or something. Or a new laptop. What about his health insurance? You can pay him money. What if you covered his health insurance, out of the church's treasury and actually just paid Blue Cross Blue Shield or whoever directly for his coverage? It'd make you feel a little better if you just gave him the money and said, you go find it on the marketplace. But, what if the church wanted to just pay the health insurance for the preacher, or to buy a building, and for the preacher to live in, a home for the preacher to live in, Learned recently, this church did that 50 years ago, 60 years ago. The building across the street. Yeah, that way, across the street. We used to be this church's property, and it was the preacher's house. Now it's we sold it years, say we, like I lived back then. But the church sold it many years ago to this dentist office or whatever, and so it's not. But yeah, so we used to have that. Okay, or a plane ticket to Africa, not to specifically be the evangelist, but to visit a preacher supported by the congregation. I've heard of that. I was just listening to a sermon from the Pepper Road Church, and Stephen Russell was talking about how they're about to go to Fiji to visit the work there, that because they're supporting not a work but supporting the preacher that's there, and so they're going to visit. Well, now, and I say that, I guess to be fair, he's not saying that the church necessarily paid for the ticket, but question is, could they do that? And I think all of that, it comes under that umbrella. You know, again, this is the discretionary idea, right? It's you know, we don't have direct literal authorization for trips to Africa. Well, I guess there's Philip, right? But but you know, you know, or the health insurance idea. It's like, well, I mean, if you wanted to be cleaner, you, like I said, you could give them a check and say, you go get the health insurance, but you're really just dodging the bullet. Like, are you supporting him or not? You know, and I think if you give him the health insurance, I think that's just fine, as much as it is to pay him. You're supporting him. I don't think the Bible says you have to cut him a check. You have to give him cash and gold coins, right? Like, there's other ways to support the man. It could be a house. You may disagree with me. Let's talk about it. Okay. That's fine. But let's just think about these sort of things and whether they're authorized. Okay. So what about a church building? Not just the building, but then there's all the expenses that go on with it. The building maintenance, you know, having plantings and things around, lawn care, electricity, water, insurance, internet, which we started doing a couple years ago, maybe a cell phone plan for the preacher, or something, or there used to be landlines back in the day, right? For the building, or a computer, projector, having a television for the slideshow, or, you know, having a printer, having a subscription to Microsoft 365, you know, or whatever, right? Like, well, and that's a little beyond the building idea, but you know, you get the idea, right? This administrative sort of things. I think, yeah, you're still supporting the preacher and his work. He probably uses PowerPoint. It would be easier for him if he just jumped on his Microsoft 365 subscription. I mean, you know, like, you know, and the whole church kind of uses it. If you've got a bigger group, you know, I mean, there's logic in that. I mean, I don't think you're going too far beyond the command. It's getting close, but I don't think you're going too far with those things. what about, we just bought some workbooks for our classes. And the idea is that you don't have to turn them back in at the end, but you can keep the workbook. You know, is that authorized? I think that's part of teaching. I think that's understandable. Songbooks, I think that's a perfectly legitimate aid in singing. Pew Bibles, we have those, you know, for people to read from. Yes, everyone can download an app now, I know, but it's nice to have a Bible for people to read out of. All right. I've got one more in, what I think is authorized. This is probably the grayest, so reaching out to visitors, handout cards. So I handed a couple of those out today to our visitors, you know, that says, this is who we are, you know, come join us for service. Then visitor card for them to fill out. What if you had a banner outside saying we're having a gospel meeting next week? or what I call swag pens, you know, like you give them away for free. It's got the church's name on it, you know. Yeah, so this is out there, I suppose, but 1 Corinthians 14, verse 23 through 25. So I think this falls under edifying. I think this falls under the general idea of trying to reach out to non-believers and people who aren't members of your church yet. And the scripture talks about that here in 1 Corinthians 14. Not about swag pens, but it says, if therefore the whole church be come together into one place and all speak with tongues, and there come in those who are unlearned, yours might say outsiders, or unbelievers. So people who you don't know, basically, no matter how you interpret that verse or how it's translated, I mean, people who you have not met before, right? So they're visitors. You know, will they not say that you're mad? And so, you know, there's no point in them coming in and not understanding what's going on. Verse 24, but if all prophesy and they're coming that one that believeth not, or one unlearned, he is convinced of all, he is judged of all, and thus are the secrets of his heart made manifest. So falling down on his face, he will worship God and report that God is in you of a truth. We do try to reach out to people. We want them to understand what's going on. We want them to remember us, you know, like, I think that that's part of it. It's not spelled out. Again, this is one where you might say, maybe we shouldn't, you know, spend church funds on these things, but I think that's still part of it. And I've pretty familiar with large sound churches doing this. It's not just us. So, doesn't mean we're right, but, just cause others do it. But I think there's a lot of, support in that general authority to do those things. All right. I'm kind of pushing on time here, so we'll try to push through some of these other ones. All right. So can the church support a grade school or a preacher training school or a daycare? And no, we just don't see any authority for those sorts of institutions, supported by the church. Even if it is mostly saints, there's just no, authority for that. And I don't have time to turn to all these things because I'm really pushing it now, but you know, the Bible talks about, we read in Acts about how these were unlearned men that were teaching, you know, they don't have to be formally trained. It's okay. And Jesus talked about, you know, that's not how the kingdom is. It's not about, you know, those things. I think Paul would talk about it's not fancy language. And 2 Timothy 2:2 talks about teaching men who will teach other men, you know, but not sending up a school. Like, I think that's going quite too far. In those things, to set up an organized training program in your church to train another preacher. Yeah, I think that falls under it. To set up a school, I think you've really gone too far. And then you can't really control who's a member or who's a student of it. And you've really just, it's just an institution at that point. All right. Can we use the building for civic purposes, for a political rally? You'll see on TV where the Republican and the Democrat both go to the historical Black Baptist Church or something like that and give a speech, and it gets on the news or whatever, right? I don't think we have any authorization for that sort of thing. voting place or polling place, a Red Cross blood drive or clothing donations, you know, we just don't see that. What about a wedding between two faithful Christians? That's a tough one, right? When Marie and I got married, we did not get married in a service in this building, though we were both attending here at the time. We you know, rented a hall at the hotel and did it there. But, you know, I remember first, when I was first coming out of the liberal ideas, I'm like, I mean, you can't have a wedding at the church building. Like, it's, come on, everyone does that. It's like, but there's no authorization for that. That's a civic activity. Yes, it's a covenant, you know, ordained by God. It's, you know, it's one of the very first covenants. I mean, you see that in the book of Genesis that, you know, the man and wife, man and woman came together and it was his wife, you know, I mean, it, of course, marriage is important, but the wedding, you don't see that as a work of the church. You don't. Traditionally, you know, you walk down the aisle. You stand at the altar, which it's not an altar, it's just a table, but you stand at the altar and you get married, you know, but, it's not what we see the church do. That's a tough one, right? Okay. What about, there's a hurricane raging outside. It just happens to fall on a Sunday. And somehow it took us by surprise, which, I mean, it, you know, we see these things coming from literally hundreds of miles away now, but we'd probably postpone services. But, you know, hypothetically, right? You know, you're gathered together. It's a Sunday and all of a sudden a hurricane strikes. And then some people are passing by outside and they didn't come in for service that day. And they're not Christians and they don't really care, but they're like, can I come in and have shelter from this hurricane? I might say yes. I don't think I'd lock them out of the building. Now, that's a tough one, right? So let's go to Luke 6. I mean, you might disagree with me, and maybe I'm wrong. But I don't know. To me, that's one where you have some mercy. Luke 6. And it came to pass on the second Sabbath after the first, that he, Jesus, went through the cornfields, and his disciples plucked the ears of corn and did eat, rubbing them in their hands. And certain of the Pharisees said unto them, why do ye that which is not lawful to do on the Sabbath days? And Jesus answering them said, and there's a lot of debate over what Jesus means in quoting this, but have you not read so much as this, what David did when himself was an hungered, and they which were with him, how he went into the house of God and did take and eat the showbread, and gave also to them that were with him, which is not lawful to eat, but for the priests alone. And he said unto them, let's say verse 11, that the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath. And it came to pass also on another Sabbath that he entered into a synagogue and taught. And there was a man whose right hand was withered, and the scribes and Pharisees watched him, whether he would heal on the Sabbath day, that they might find an accusation against him. But he knew their thoughts, and said to the man which had the withered hand, rise up and stand forth in the midst. And he arose and stood forth. Then Jesus said unto them, they didn't even let them accuse him. Jesus said unto them, I will ask you one thing. Is it lawful on the Sabbath days to do good or to do evil, to save life or to destroy it? And looking round about upon them all, he said unto the man, stretch forth thy hand. And he did so, and his hand was restored whole as the other. And they were filled with madness and communed one with another as to what they might do to Jesus. So I'm not Jesus. I don't know when to apply this principle here. When to supposedly break the rule, but you know, and it is so scary to me to go down that path, right? Because the moment you break that rule, you say, well, we let someone in because it was a hurricane, you know. It's like, why don't we just give money to charities all over the place? You know, I know, and so you want to never go down that path. But I tell you what, I mean, if someone's about to die, I think we let them in. I don't think you stop someone for that. Now, do you, from that day on, say, anytime there's a hurricane, we'll open this building as a shelter? By the way, I don't even know if this place is actually more safe than anywhere else, but if it was, you know, are we going to always, you know, get some cots and just make it a place for everybody to take refuge? You know, no, I'm not going down that path. I'm not saying that that's okay. But in a true emergency, Do you let them in? I mean, I think so, you know? all right. Man, I'm really out of time here. So, blending the church and the individual, this is hard, and I'll probably have to just leave you with these ideas, but, it's a good thing we read the scripture already. So the scripture we read in Deuteronomy 6 talks about, you know, when you lie down and when you rise up and when you walk on the way, you teach your children these things. So the idea is you're blending teaching godly principles and your daily life. Does that make it okay for a church to do that? You know, and that's that line that, you know, just because we do that individually, maybe, you know, we don't have definite authorization to do that as a church, right? So we have songbooks. We use it for singing the songs in the assembly that we're authorized to have, and this makes sense, right? What if we take those songbooks to a funeral? To me, that's pushing it, right? I don't feel comfortable with that. Some people think that would be just fine because you're doing a good work. But is it a work of the church? If it's a work of the church, does everybody have to come to the funeral? You know, like, is it a meeting time? Like, you want to have it both ways, don't you? You want it to be a work of the church, but not everybody has to come. Like, well, is it forsaking the assembly if you don't go to that funeral? Like, you're really getting messy here, right? you know, you have it singing at someone's home. We did this a couple years ago, right? And our family has purchased 30 songbooks so that we can bring them to singings and we don't have to muddy these waters, right? you know, but you have that service and then you, you know, you say, well, okay, you know, but is that a work of the church? You know, having a singing at someone else's house. Well, how do you know when that service begins and ends? Do you make that clear line? You know, do you, you know, who knows? So, and then there's, you know, all sorts of things along those ideas. What if you bring the songbook to your own house to practice songs? I did that for years. I think that's probably reasonable, you know. I mean, I don't see anything against that, but it's if you're going to be a song leader, because you're doing it to prepare for the service. But you know, you could just buy a book. They've gone up now. They're like almost $20 now. Anyway, and then other things like that. So, all right, we'll wrap up with this, and this kind of goes well with the invitation song. So, if you want to start getting that ready, but Joshua 1, 7 through 9, I'll just read it off the slide. I'm not going to turn there. but Joshua was told by God to, as he's about to lead the people to conquer Canaan, to be very careful, but at the same time, to be strong and courageous. So he says, only be strong and very courageous. Be careful to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, so that you may have success wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth. What does that have to do with battle, right? It's everything. but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it, for then you will make your way prosperous, then you will have success. Have I not commanded you, be strong, courageous. Do not tremble or be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. In all these things and all that we've talked about, we are being careful. We're being careful not to turn to the right or the left, to walk down that very straight and narrow path of what is authorized. Even if it seems like it doesn't matter, what does meditating on the book of the law have to do with going into battle? You know, well, it is. It's everything we do. We do it, carefully, in the way that God prescribes. but still be strong and courageous. That doesn't mean, you know, just because we're careful doesn't mean don't act. Still be strong and courageous. Go in that battle and win that land. So. as we wrap up, you know, if you're here this day and you're not part of the army of the Lord, you're not a Christian and you've not obeyed the call of the gospel, this is a good time to do that, to be courageous, and to reject sin and to come to Jesus and repent, confess, and believe and be baptized. If there's any here that wish to ask for the prayers of the saints as well for their needs, then you can do that as you can come forward as we stand and sing the invitation song.